have in the studio with us right now Keith Taylor, the author of the book and guide, Northumbria Day Zone. We're going to fly a few questions at you.
Well, first of all, Carl, let me say how pleased I am that you've invited me here, and thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to talk to you.
It's quite all right, thank you very much. The first question for you is, I'm a Northumbrian and have been for 18 years, and I took one look at the book and I was transfixed. What do you think about Northumberland that everybody loves?
It's an extraordinary county, as you're well aware. It's over 2,000 square miles. It has in its north a town that was once part of Scotland. It changed hands between Scotland and England 13 times. And we go all the way down to the Tyne. So within those 2,000 square miles, there's only 158 people per square mile. So I think the extraordinary thing about Northumberland is the opportunity to be alone and yet to be involved with a substantial part of this nation's history. We were involved with the Celts. We were the cradle of Christianity when St. Oswald invited St. Aidan over. We were invaded by the Romans, who actually had to put a wall up to stop us escaping into Scotland, which we would perhaps like to do now, which is the land of free geriatric care and free university education. Who knows, they may well be independent, in which case the Farne Islands will perhaps become a tax haven, who knows. But loving Northumberland is something about being born here. It's an umbilical cord that draws you back to Northumberland, and it really makes your heart sing every time you open the door and breathe its air.
Lots of people, actually, that I talk to, maybe down the street in sea houses or in Alnwick, for example, say that they come here and it's their relatives that have been here before, and they've been here with them, and then once their relatives have passed away, they keep coming back every year.
Yes, it's almost magnetic in a way. One of the enlightening things about Northumbria is you can never know it all. As I say, the tapestry of history is embroidered right throughout it. Any hill you look at will have had at least five or six battles fought on it. There'll have been legions of Romans, hordes of Celts, tons of reavers. A vast amount of an array of our culture will have passed right in front of our noses. And really, all I've sought to do was to try to provide an entertaining series of days out that would encourage the visitor to perhaps experience and enjoy the raptures that Northumberland has to give.
What actually made you write this?
Well, we were in the accommodation providing business some years ago in Embleton. We had a little residential restaurant called Sarah's Kitchen. And many of our guests that came from either Somerset or Scandinavia or somewhere outside of the area, the first thing they asked was, what is there to do round here? So I made it my business to write down a series of little days out for them. And this always occurred at breakfast time. And it also gave us the opportunity the next day to say, well, did you enjoy going to Lindisfarne or Berwick or Routing Lynn or something? Oh, well, we didn't go. Why was that? Well, because we were so involved with the Farne Islands. Could we stay another night? Yes, of course you can. So it was a tool in a way to satisfy the curiosity of our customers. And latterly, when I was able to have my own little tour company called Not Entirely Sure Tours, well, I was able to sort of formalize it in a series of days out, which having unfortunately contracted a lung disorder, I've had to put down on paper now. So this is a series of events that led to the production of the book.
It's a book that's very handy for tourists. Lots of people who come up here, of course, are tourists. But my dad has lived in Northumberland for 53 years, and he was transfixed in it, and tourists will be as well. How can it apply to both the people? I mean,
well, I think everybody has a curiosity. And this is one of the things about being a tourist, and I'm sure you will know on a personal level that whenever you go to somewhere that is new or basically foreign to you, albeit even in this country, your first instinct is to find out a little more about it. And I think this is part of the problem with the tourist industry per se, is that there is no really formal structure for documenting the places of interest that could be of significance to those people that are from outside of the area. We live with them day in, day out. We are brought up within their margins, but our visitors aren't, and they require some guidance. And all we can do is to perhaps interpret their wishes and have for them a series of opportunities. It's not dictatorial, it's entirely an advisory element of what we have to offer, and they may then select their own menu for their own enjoyment. So it's not devised as a historical guidebook per se. You know, if you wanted a history lesson, you'd go to night school, you know. This has all of the elements of a little bit of religion, a little bit of battle and blood and guts, you know, some interesting asides about the flora and fauna, and it provides the opportunity for many of our accommodation providers to encourage their guests to linger longer.
Yes.
By telling them where to go.
Yes. Who do you think will get the greatest benefit from the book?
It's difficult to say who'll get the greatest benefit, but I would rather hope that, firstly, the people that provide the accommodation in our area may find it of great use. It's quite extraordinary that the recent survey conducted by Visit Northumbria indicated that 48% of our visitors here expect to be informed about the region by their accommodation providers, whilst in fact only 37% go to a tourist information centre. So this is an expectation that our visitors have, is that yes, they come up to visit Northumberland, and I mean, they don't come for clean sheets, a duvet or a telly in the room or an ensuite, because they can get that in Somerset or Scandinavia or Benidorm or wherever they go. They come to Northumberland for a variety of reasons, but many of them come out of pure curiosity, and they're stimulated by the invitation from brochures on the beaches and the castles and the history of the place. But that's very broad brush. So I think it would be useful for accommodation providers to have a copy of this, that they themselves may be able to direct their visitors and hopefully, as we did in the past, encourage them to stay longer in our county. So that's the first objective. But the second, of course, is for them to take it away with them. It's at a very competitive retail price and barely reflects the printing. But it is something that they can show around in the pub when they get home. Where did you go on holiday? Where was it? I found this. Oh, God, that looks nice. I might give that a try. So there's a benefit, I hope. But I've been quite extraordinarily moved by the number of people who've said, you know, we've lived here all this time, as you've said to me, and I didn't know this, and it's just 15 miles up the road or 10 miles or whatever else, and it'll help me greatly when my relatives come or when the guests come to stay. So it will serve the local population, I hope, quite well by being able to entertain their friends and relatives when they come to Northumberland and perhaps encourage them to come independently.
Yes, my auntie lives just down by London. She'll come up.
Oh,
and
good.
She'll wonder what to do when they're up.
Yes, just give her that. Yes, she has a selection of 10 days, you see. If her bag is going along the coast, there are three very nice days there, but including one at Lindisfarne, which is very descriptive. Also, of course, we have the valleys. She can go wandering up the Till or the Glendale. How beautiful. All of these things are within the book, so her choices are legion for her.
And it does, just a small thing, it does look, I mean, you pick it up, if it's on the shelf, it instantly stands out, the colouring on both.
Yeah.
It's very, very well done, I do have to say. And just talking a bit more about Northumberland, I mean, I live in Seahouses. I mean, I'm living in Seahouses, just so close, 3 miles up the road, you've got Barnborough with the castle.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic that it's there, still there in modern times, as to say.
Yes, it's extraordinary, really, because it's recorded history. It starts from 547, when this marvellous man, Ada the Flame Bearer, turned up, and he was an Angle, which is why we all became English, of course. But he didn't come by invitation, as the Saxons did in the south. He came in conquest, and he landed to the north of the Wash, and he fought his way up with a small war band. They're described as armies, but there could have been perhaps no more than 50. But they were armed, and they set about the local population and decimated them, and decided that Bamburgh would be the place for them. So they're the beginnings. And ultimately, of course, when Lord Armstrong bought it in 1898 and spent £1 million in refurbishing it, he did the tourist industry one of the all-time great favours, apart from being the first hydroelectric house in that he made in Cragside. So we have a lot to thank him for. And, of course, his current ancestors, Francis, the great custodian of it.
Yes. And we do have to say, as a guide in Northumberland for many years, and we do have to ask you one slight question. If you were to go out for the day in Northumberland, where would you go?
Oh, I think I'd possibly go over through Wooler and then through Doddington and then down to Routing Lynn. It's one of my very favourite places. And I'd gaze in absolute astonishment at the cup and ring markings there. And I'd try, as I always do, to conclude whether they were astrological, astronomical, cartographical, whether they were a legend of something. But it will never solve the enigma. But then I'd drift down to have a look at the waterfall where all the fairies in Northumberland are buried, the 33 feet of tiny stream delving into a black pool of ferns and gentle sounds. It's got tranquility that is unbeatable. And then perhaps down through into Ford and Eton, and that would be a day that I would take on a desert island with me.
We do have to say, I mean, we went away on holiday. We went away to Cardiff before. We've been away all over the place. We went away to places abroad as well. And it's amazing when you go away on holiday and you say, oh, where are you from? And, you know, we'll say, oh, we're from Sears. Oh, yes, Northumberland. You know, they always... That's what they always say.
Yeah.
And they all know.
Yes, they do.
About this.
Well, this is the land north of the Humber. I mean, it's got a ring about it. It was feared throughout Europe. And yet, our evangelists from Lindisfarne evangelized all of Western Germany and Europe. That the Lindisfarne Scriptorium sent copies of the Bible to the popes in Rome. I mean, our legacy to the country is really quite extraordinary. And I suppose we really have to thank those lovely people in London for looking after the Lindisfarne Gospels for us, just in case we lose them.
Why is it that local people do not really appreciate what we have around us in Northumberland? I mean, I was on the... I went out for a walk with the dog this morning, early doors. And, you know, you just walk around as though it's normal.
The extraordinary thing is, Carl, I think it's familiarity in a way, not necessarily breeding contempt, but breeding complacency. We're all involved in our day-to-day lives. We're extremely fortunate to live in an area of outstanding natural beauty along the coast. And our town has been voted the best place to live in Britain. We're also the best shopping street, according to Google. We have an extraordinary climate. I know it's not particularly good today, but it's slightly macro. And we have all of these things around us that other people would kill for. But perhaps because we're native and we see them on a day-to-day basis, we're more worried about the utility bills, the traffic going through Bond Gate, or whatever else that may be disturbing us. And we perhaps should take a little time and investigate more thoroughly what we have around us and what it means, not only to the county, but to try and get it to have some meaning for ourselves. And this is the value of the book. You would be able to have explained to you, perhaps, why a particular hill is this shape, or which castle is there, and why, and who owned it, and under what circumstances it fell into the condition it is. These sort of things are available on an hourly basis, but we're too close, perhaps.
Yes, and there is one thing, actually, we were talking about in our family, actually, about a month or so ago. Maybe you may be able to answer this question, because there was one side of the family saying that it wasn't, and the other side saying that it was. Apparently, Dunstanburgh Castle was once made of wood.
Well, it would have been initially, but however, it was actually built in 1333 by Thomas, the Earl of Lancaster, And he was a fairly vicious character. And as you know, the House of Lancaster were ultimately at odds with the Yorkists. But he built it as a secure refuge. He didn't build it for any other reason than to hide himself in when he was, in fact, effectively trying to be a kingmaker. So in 1334, when then King Edward II was having a little bit of an away day at a place called Bannockburn in Scotland, and he drifted into Dunsinborough and invited Thomas for a day's sport up at Stirling, which had actually transpired to the biggest defeat in English history, the Battle of Bannockburn, the Earl declined, said, no, not today, thanks, no, I think I'll give it a miss. So on his way back, Edward sacked the whole place. And then ultimately, of course, it had to be rebuilt. But it was never a threat. But yes, most certainly, the addition of the Lilburn Tower on that wonderful bit of rock jutting out is a miracle of architecture, and would have always been in stone.
Right, thank you. I was the one that was battling to say that part of it would be made in stone. I actually said that it would all be made in stone, but won't tell. And if you are up on a self-catering holiday, or maybe just tired and bored with the same old dinner every night, you also have another book as well, called Eating Out by Staying In. I've read this, and it is just as good as Northumbria Days Out. It really is. Can you tell us a bit about that while you're here?
Well, I can. I wrote it for the beleaguered husband who could get a few brownie points by cooking up a meal of a particular cuisine to entertain his bride without driving miles to pay a restaurant a substantial price and avoid the boys in blue on the way home by constructing a menu of her favourite country for her in your own home. So saying, okay, pet, where would you like to eat tonight? Well, we'll go to Morocco. Oh, fine. So I devised this over 12 countries, Europe, the Middle East, India, China, and America, in a series of menus that were a question of a starter, a fish course, an entree, lamb, pork, beef, chicken, offal, vegetarian, and a choice of sweets. So you present your beloved with the menu in the morning, and then you, and this is the good part, are shown how to cook it. And there's always a sting in the tail, better still, how to present it. So I've tried to introduce a little bit of humour into it as well, but it's a difficult thing competing against Nigella Lawson and Jamie Oliver and Rick Steen. But it's certainly, as you rightly say, it's different. But also it works.
Yes, it is. It's very, very good. And I have a Jamie Oliver cookbook at home. Don't have anything against the man. But there's something about Eating Out by Staying In which I would rather cook recipes out of that book than my Jamie Oliver cookbook. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's very good, and I have to say this with great respect to you, that your size would betray that. Yes.
So we're back to Northumbria Days Out, actually. If I wanted to go out and buy this book tomorrow, or if anybody wanted to go out and buy this book tomorrow, where could we wander out to buy this
book? You could wander into W.H. Smith in Alnwick, where the ever-lovely Karen Chisholm has got a copy or two for sale. The tourist information are going to stock it. So there too. It's very difficult because bookshops are a dying breed, really, and there are very few of them about. So what I've tried to do is to encourage the accommodation providers to buy the book from me and to display it in their B&Bs or guest houses or holiday cottages, and that's the first point of contact for the customer, the holidaymaker, this great fictitious creature that suddenly appears, you know, every summer on our horizon, and it's our job always to satisfy them, and like migratory birds, we have to encourage them always to come back, and to do that, we must feed them properly, and not food as you and I know it, but I think spiritually and geographically and emotionally we have to feed them. And if we're successful in doing that, we'll encourage our visitor numbers, which regrettably have been falling over the last year or so. So, yeah, an accommodation provider might get you a copy, but of course you could always hit the web, get onto www.northumbriadaysout and buy it online. I would like to say, though, it's very good of you to have given such a glowing account of it, but if I might be allowed a few dedications of
Definitely, yes.
When you buy it, you'll see that it's in the form of a shorthand notebook, and it goes two ways, so it's most interesting to read. There's 150 photographs in it, but I've dedicated this to every Northumbrian that smiles at a stranger. Because in former times, anybody that was a stranger was obviously after your cattle, your wife, your money, or something else like that. So I think over the years, we perhaps got out of the habit of smiling at strangers. But I think if we could get back into it, and everybody that we saw that had, was strange to us, perhaps they're a tourist, and they would welcome us so much. But Dave Hurrell has helped me greatly in the proofreading. Andy Gray at South Charlton for the website and the design and photographs, and all of the great institutions, and more particularly our farmers, who are the custodians of our countryside. And it is to them that we must look towards the continuation of our own heritage. So I'd like to thank them and you for this opportunity.
It's quite all right. And as we say, you do have a website, which was northumbriadaysout.com. And my late gran always called Northumberland God's Own County. And it is, it's like God's Own County.
Well, I think to be not sectarian about it, but without a doubt, we were picked by some divine authority, because the evangelical movement of Celtic Christianity from St. Columba through St. Aidan down here onto Lindisfarne, and the huge impact that St. Cuthbert had on international Christianity certainly makes me believe that this is a place where God hears your call.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
I've enjoyed it greatly, Carl, and many, many thanks for your time.
It's quite all right.